I'm Tara.
And this is Melody. And we are Skip, Shuffle, Repeat, a podcast about compact memories in jewel cases.
We're exploring music and friendship through the artifact of CDs. Join us as we revisit the sounds that shaped our lives.
Hi, Tara.
Hi. How's it going?
Oh, it's great. It's great.
I believe you. That's really awesome.
Thank you. I like it when things are going great. I'm happily unemployed these days. So, really winning. Hopefully it means that podcasting will get better.
It's really going to take off. So if you haven't joined our Patreon yet, now's the chance so that...
Now is the time. We have added our Patreon. Check it out. Skip, Shuffle, Repeat. Support us in whatever means you feel you'd like to. And we appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thanks so much. We will be doing bonus episodes and probably really dumb videos and probably videos and pictures of our cats or dog.
You're welcome. some very spicy content that is only available to good people like you who sign up today.
That's right.
So don't dilly dally. Get on it.
No dallying. Let's see. We're doing another CD. It's been a hot minute. It's been a while, but we're back to it. Very exciting. Mm-hmm. This one I selected. A really amazing album just called B-Sides. by Damien Rice. And it was released in August of 2004. What'd you think, Tara? What'd you think when you received the B-Sides? Just B-Sides. There's no the B-Sides. I apologize.
Correct. That's correct.
Yeah.
Well, I think the first thing that I noticed is the cover has a parental advisory on it for explicit lyrics. And I was surprised to see that on a Damien Rice album because I didn't expect Damien to be
spicy,
dropping some bombs. Yeah. And this is where the full disclosure comes in. I have not listened to Damien Rice very much. So this was a very new thing for me and a very interesting excursion made more interesting by the explicit content sticker. So I was like, whoa, I didn't expect that. This is going to be cool. So,
yeah, I will actually also admit that when I pulled it out to get it, I have a few Damien Rice albums. I selected this one as the first one for a few reasons that we'll get into. But I also was shocked to see the explicit sticker. And I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot. And then, obviously in my brain, I was like, what is it? And then I listened to it and I was like, oh, that's why. I got it. I figured it out. Yeah. Should we talk about why I picked it?
Yeah.
So I selected this album because I recently saw Damien Rice live in person in New York City at the King's Theater this November or last November. We're in a new year. November 29th, 2023. And I loved Damien Rice when he first sort of released stuff. So in the early aughts, I was a really big fan and, had his first three albums and listened to them all the time. But I had never seen him live. And a friend of mine had an extra ticket. He was nice enough to go through all the work of just getting everything prepared and then being like, hey, do you want to join? Or honestly, I may have been like, hey, can I join you? And he said yes. And so I, spur of the moment, I literally flew into New York to go see this concert. I flew in, I went to dinner, I watched the concert, I spent the night, I left the next day. Like literally went for this show.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was great. Like a lot of people were making fun of me about being like real bougie. Like, oh, I'm just going to fly into New York real quick for a show.
What? They're fucking jealous. That's the dream.
It's all jealousy for sure. and I use points to get there. and he had a hotel. So like, I didn't pay for a place to stay. It was fine. It was fine.
It's fine. You're an adult. You make whatever decisions you want.
Yeah. but the show was fucking incredible. It was incredible. The venue, King's Theater, is this older theater that's one of those, you know, kind of opulent ones that you walk in and it's obviously been there forever and it's just like big and ornate. And so it was a really beautiful space. And I think for me, the thing that was so incredible about it was that it was just silent. He like commanded the audience. I mean, I swear he'll hear like a pin drop in that audience. When we were laughing, we were clapping and all of that stuff, like at the appropriate moments. But then when that would subside, it was just like silence. People were just like, you know, leaning in, kind of listening to him. And it was such a great show. I cried during a song we'll discuss later. And yeah, I just like, he is as good live as he is on any of his albums. And it was just so good. And he had a female opener and I don't remember her name, and I will find it and we'll put it in the notes, in our liner notes of this podcast. He had someone opening and then he had another woman who joined him as he normally does. He has always a female voice in his stuff. And I think she played the upright bass. And it was incredible. It was an incredible show. And I was very moved by it. And I was so impressed. And I was also like, where have you been? Like, these three albums came out. This is a B-side. O came out in 2002. I think his next one, 9, came out in 2006. And then that's when I stopped listening, because nothing else came out that I knew of. Turns out something came out in 2014. Which I still haven't listened to, but I don't know. It was just really, it was incredible to be there with a sold out show in New York City and him just playing all these songs that we all know from these first few albums. Right. And this guy is just like kind of cruising on these things that he's done so long ago, 20 years ago, you know?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And the opening song to the show after Cute Little Story is the opening song to this album.
Ah.
So that's what prompted it. Also, this album has two of my favorite songs, period, by him. Hmm. So it just felt like an appropriate album to start with because of all that. That was a lot. You're welcome.
Yeah, I love everything about that story. There's something really powerful about being in a kind of like intimate concert setting, where everyone is like almost holding their breath, listening to every word and every note and every like strum, like every little tiny detail is just like so critical. Those are really magical experiences. So how exciting that you got to have that.
Yeah. There is a recording of it. My friend sent it to me. Someone recorded the entire concert. It's on YouTube. I will be dropping it also in our liner notes.
Yes.
For you to peruse at your leisure. Which
Go ahead.
I feel a little weird about. I mean, I honestly, you know, we have many thoughts that we can definitely get into about people videoing things. I honestly, you know, while this happened, and I will do it, there was someone right in front of me. There was a guy who kept videoing with his phone right in front of me. And I was so mad and annoyed because it was distracting. And I'm like, read the room.
Yeah.
you know, well, I don't like it when people, you know, tape the whole show. I get annoyed with even a little bit, even though I am susceptible to that. I think we all are. And I understand the urge to do it. But I feel like it's disrespectful to the player, the person, whoever's playing. And it's disrespectful to the other people in the audience. So. Yeah, it's Wiley will still post it. Fuck that guy. You know?
Yeah. Well, I'm excited then to listen to it. I mean, because I would never have looked it up and thought about, you know, listening to that show had I not been forced to listen to this album for the pod. So
yeah.
But now, like I think I'd probably get down on that. That'd be pretty good.
So cool. Yeah.
So, okay. The cover of the B-side CD. Mm-hmm. First, just to describe what we're looking at for everyone. And this is cardboard case. There is no plastic inside at all, which I think is very intentional from what I understand about Damien Rice. And the front, other than the sticker that we've talked about, it has his name and it says B-sides underneath. And then there's a sketch, a little pin drawing of what I interpret as a couple, but it's something that looks like a guy, someone kind of dressed like a feminine attire. They both have kind of like, not stern, but solemn faces. Mm-hmm. It's
They're not happy.
They don't look the happiest.
They're not a happy couple.
No. Their arms are both crossed, but they're still sitting like right next to each other. Like they're holding each other,
right? Yeah, they're like touching each other in a way that is very intimate and very, you recognize as like somebody who has like a relationship and loves each other.
Yeah.
Even though they are, very stern and don't seem to be enjoying their time together right now in the moment. Yeah. But I mean, I do think that, you know, that's what I kind of love about Damien Rice's stuff is a lot of his work is about relationships and about both the like the ecstasy, the good, but a lot of times sort of the bad and the complicated feelings that can come up within love and relationships, you know? Mm-hmm. And so like it's kind of a perfect image, this idea of like maybe a couple that's been together forever, but they're not necessarily happy, but they're still so used to each other that they're still part of each other. And
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I just saw in the back, they acknowledge the drawing and they call it Grumps Drawing by Damien Rice and Lisa Hannigan. So I think grumps is the right way to
they're a bunch of grumps.
Characterize that. Yeah.
For sure.
Other than that, there's not a lot of detail inside. It's pretty bare with just a little bit of the liner notes in terms of, you know, credits, that kind of thing. And since there's some live recordings on here, they cite, you know, the different concerts where those were recorded. But otherwise, it's pretty simple case aesthetic.
But in great condition.
Mm-hmm.
No tearsies or anything. Just like your Dr. Dog cardboard guy.
Yeah.
How was the actual CD? I didn't take notes about the like condition of it. I remember it being pretty good, but
yeah, it was perfect. There's like literally no marks on it at all. And it played perfectly. It's a shorter album and I had no problems with it at all.
Cool.
So you did great as a caretaker of this artifact.
When my friend mentioned the concert, I like my heart blossomed, literally just being like, oh man, I have not thought about Damien Rice in a long time, but I loved him at that time. I mean, I was really, really into his stuff, which is why I have the only three albums that exist until the 2014. Mm-hmm. So they're all in pretty good condition, I believe.
Yeah. So when did you first hear of Damien Rice? When did you start listening?
So I was trying to figure this out. I don't really know. Part of me feels like potentially like, because his song Blower's Daughter from his first album, was like a hit, right? Like it like made the charts or whatever. And there is a small chance that I actually just heard it on the radio or whatever. But this is, you know, this is going to be a theme, you know, over and over again. But the song Blower's Daughter is in the 2004 movie Closer, starring like Jude Law and...
Oh, Jude Law. Pause. I need to just think for a moment about Jude Law. Oh, shit. Clive Owen is also...
Yeah, it's Clive Owen, Julia Roberts,
Natalie Portman.
I loved this movie when it came out. I have not revisited it in a while. I think it's a very complicated movie. And I'm sure a lot of people hate it, honestly. But I was a fan when it came out, and
the looks like 2004 is when it came out.
Yeah. And the end scene in the movie is Blower's daughter is playing. Like, it's just a shot of Natalie Portman walking. There's no dialogue. It's just the song playing. And that's how the film ends. And it was very impactful. And I, the reason why I'm like, I don't know, I remember feeling like, oh, it's that song. So it's like, I knew when that happened, I knew that song already. But I think that, you know, music in movies often pulls me into wanting to learn more about it. So I'm not sure if I got O before or after seeing Closer. Mm-hmm. I believe I was already aware of Blower's Daughter. But man, that movie solidifies it. And it really, for a long time, was one of the first things I heard of when I thought of Damien's. Like, it's so good. But yeah, I mean, you know, go ahead.
I was just going to have another pause for how beautiful these folks are in this movie.
They are gorgeous.
I feel like I did see this, but I don't, because I vaguely remember the plot, but not enough to actually be able to recount it. But just looking at stills of this movie, I'm like, oh,
it's a very sexy movie. I mean, the movie is about sex and relationships. It's about men and women engaging with each other in a romantic or non-romantic sexual way. Like, that's the whole movie. And so, yeah, there's some sexy people.
And that makes sense for his music then, right? For how you described it all being about relationships and intimacy.
Yeah.
Not just happiness, but just the ins and outs of all that. Right.
Well, and, you know, re-listening to Damien both at the concert and, you know, listening to this album, and I've obviously just started listening to all the albums again, I am reminded that, like, he talks from a very male voice. He's from a male perspective in relationships. And as a female, sometimes that can be complicated, right? Listening to it and engaging with it. But I appreciate his honesty and it so much that I find it beautiful. But I could see his music maybe turning some ladies off, not on. And the characters in that movie, the men are, I mean, like, you, it's like you're attracted to them, but you're also like, I kind of hate you, you know? And so I think, like, he is a really good choice for the music for that reason, because the male voice in that, in the movie is very complicated, but it is very present. And it's interesting because it really focuses on the way that these two men approach women and relationships. Because they're very different. I'd be curious to see, like, I haven't rewatched that movie. And I have thought, like, oh, I should revisit it because I may hate it now. I remember loving it when it came out. I really thought it was great. And I really liked the performances of all four main actors. So, yeah. Yeah. And this is your first time listening to Damien Rice.
Yeah. So now that, you know, you mentioned this movie, like, I probably have heard that song that you're referencing. And there was at least one song on this album that I heard and I was like, oh, I know this from someplace. I still don't know where, but it was familiar enough that I could kind of easily pick up the tune and sing along with it and have some sort of, like, vague nostalgia for it, but I couldn't place it. And this is 2004. Yeah. I mean, at that point we were all living in Dallas, right?
We were all hanging out.
And it was that prime time of, you know, of life on paper, they say, like, when you're the coming of age time or whatever, like, into adulthood on your own and yada, yada, yada. So that's what was happening in my world, I think.
Yeah, it seems likely that you would have, I mean, probably heard it just around me even a little bit, you know?
Probably so.
Like, even if it wasn't like I'm playing it for us, just like me playing it in my room or mm-hmm. whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think about, like, what are your thoughts on this album and Damien Rice? Like, how'd you receive it?
I listened to it a lot, uh-huh. a lot. There are certainly songs on there that I like and some lyrics that really stand out that have made me think a little bit about them. But I don't necessarily love a lot of the like mixing and production. And there's some of my like just little pet peeves about things that come up in these songs. I'm like, ugh. Especially when it comes to live recordings. But other than that, I thought it was, I've enjoyed listening to it multiple times. And the songs that I like, I do really like now. And of course, you know, I love the French language.
Yeah.
And the first song has a nice little verse at the end that is in French. And that is a very kind of a sweet, well, French always sounds sweet to me, but
mm-hmm. same.
It's
same.
Nice little cherry on that song, I think. And yeah, I think it's good. It's short. Like this is, it's the same thing with that Dr.
It's a taster.
Album,
yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I think I would want to hear a full album
mm-hmm.
to really have a strong opinion about his music. But this is like a nice, like, introduction or, you know, yeah. amuse-bouche for some other mm-hmm. French.
Right.
Poorly spoken. yeah, we're going to edit that out.
No, we are not.
I also really enjoyed, like, of course, I looked him up and read a little bit about like his activism
mm-hmm.
and, you know, like that he did, like he was a busker, you know, and like, so I think a lot about his life seems pretty interesting. And I admire kind of the passion that drives him on certain issues. And I don't necessarily see that all come through in his music, at least in this particular album. But I think that makes him seem more interesting and more complicated. And therefore, a longer album might reveal some of those other things better than this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're going to keep going. You're going to keep listening to other things.
Maybe. I think I might listen to the first album.
Okay. I mean, you can wait. It is in my stack of CDs. So
yeah. So I'll wait until you decide that it's time for me to listen to it.
to the full one.
Yeah. And so this is actually really good for that because I don't make decisions very easily. And so, yeah, you just tell me when I need to listen to it. Send it on over. That way I don't have to figure out what to put in my car.
It's good. It's good. That's good.
What about you? Did it hit the same spots when you listened to it again after
mm-hmm.
the concert and the time between your last listen?
Yeah, it really did. All of his music did. I mean, again, it just... The show was really powerful. I really enjoyed it so much. I enjoyed listening to him talk between songs. I enjoyed every song he played. I cried, like I said, at a song that really means a lot to me. It's on this album. It's also on another album. And yeah, just listening to his music, it makes me feel a lot, but it like makes me feel a little forlorn. And, you know, I mean, I'm single and I have had complicated relationships with my relationships. And yeah, I just think that his music really resonates with me in those feelings when I'm feeling very, it's not even lonely. It's just like, you know, thinking about, yeah, the complication of relationships, particularly between men and women. And right now I'm trying to like app date again, which is a nightmare, which we can talk about off mic or on mic, whatever. And, you know, his music makes me, it's like, it's weird. Cause it's like, oh, I both like want to meet someone like him, right? Like he makes me like, oh, this is obviously a man who is very in touch with his feelings. He's also very honest about the things that he's going through and uses his music to like work through things, you know? And I feel like you can hear it and feel it in his music. And because of that, then I can feel it within my life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like a nice, like I don't, it's like something you put on when you're feeling a certain way. You're like, I need this right now. I need to feel this way. And this music resonates with those feelings. And, you know, I'm going to dig in and kind of dwell there for a bit. So, yeah, I mean, I've been a little bit just kind of since the show in November, really going back to his music a lot lately. Again, I'm going back to what I know. I've not listened to the latest album that was almost 10 years ago released. But it's interesting because even at his concert, I was wondering how many songs would I not know that he played. And there were a couple, but one was for sure with his band that he had prior to going solo. So there was only probably one or two from the like newer-ish album because I knew everything from the show. And it's a concentrated body, right? It's like a lot of his music in this like 2000, 2006.
Right.
And then there's a, you know, whatever, 8-year gap and then nothing. So yeah, it's interesting. I really would, you know, I'm always curious. It seems like he doesn't go on tour that often, but it almost felt like watching him that he goes when he needs to like re-feel those things, revisit his own stuff. Or maybe he just misses the audience. Who knows? Because, yeah, I've only been to a few shows like that, but I have been to some. You've been to some that are like, yeah, again, where everyone's like leaning in and just we're all there together, you know? I was surprised I only cried once, honestly. When I walked in, I was like, this is going to be emotional. Like when it started, I was like, oh, shit. This is going to get emotional. But I only cried in one, but the one I cried, I just let myself weep. I just did. I literally like let myself just fucking bawl. There was no sound, just a lot of tears.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. The word that kept coming to mind when you were just talking was exasperated. That's I think what some of these songs are for me. It's like, oh, you just want to like let out a big sigh, be like, come on, like with some of the stuff that it seems like he's describing. You know, you want things to go well. You want relationships to work out. You want things to be easier than they are. And that felt like there was a lot of just like misalignment in what he was sharing. And that just gets like so exasperating to have to go through that so many times and in so many different ways. Ugh.
Yeah, it's weighty, right? You're just like, ugh, again. But when you want that, because you're feeling that in life,
exactly.
You know, it's something to easily grasp. And he's so honest. It feels like he's being very, very honest. Like it feels very real. Like these songs are from his life. You know, some of the best music is always like that, right? Where it's not the garbage album that we did already.
No, you know, no, it's more like the Joni Mitchell album.
Exactly.
Like I feel like that came up a lot when we talked about that. It's like this was a moment in her life that she like was highlighting in these, you know, 8-12 songs or whatever. And and that's what this feels. You can tell it's
like he needs to get it out.
Yeah,
this is something he needs to like work through, and part of working through for him as a musician is to like get these songs out there and kind of purge the emotions through the making of the songs. And you really feel it. It's so good. I am such a fan. Damien Rice, please come and talk to us on our podcast.
Ooh. Yeah.
We can Zoom you from Ireland. Yeah.
Yeah, it is funny. So a space on the internet that talks about his politics or advocacy or whatever. And he did a couple of songs. He did one. It was 2005 for the freedom campaign for Burma about Aung San Suu Kyi. And he performed that in 2006 at the Nobel Peace Prize concert. We were in Dallas then, but there was that peace conference that I was involved with.
Yeah.
And like
you're working for.
Yeah. And so now I'm wondering if, because you were listening to him a lot then, if that ever overlapped as just some weird kind of like coincidence of your interest in what I was doing in my life and than this. And then he also did songs for Tibet and a couple other like moments like that or throughout the world where he honored things. And then in 2020, he did a cover of Chandelier. And I have heard this cover and I don't know where. It's got to be in some TV show or movie. It has to be, because I have heard him sing that cover. I can't get out of my head now. So,
ooh,
yeah.
Is it accessible and like,
yeah, we'll find
Spotify
it.
Spotify.
Yeah. Yeah, surely. Surely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like a really decent dude. And God, there's just not enough of them in the world.
There's not.
It's kind of nice to see like everything on this guy is like.
He seems very thoughtful. He seems very aware and present in his life. And
yeah,
I mean, I think the fact that he doesn't throw out albums left and right all the time showcases also like his, I don't know, his dedication to like living his life and not living for whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. The chase of fame and money and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm. So did he hint at all about a new album coming out then at his concert?
No.
Mm-mm. Did you get a vibe that he was working on something or do you think this was just?
I think from what I gathered is that he just goes on tour sometimes and that's just something he does. What I felt like was like he misses being around people and you know, he wants that experience. It is part of being a musician is being able to like share those moments with a crowd. And again, he was very compelling and commanding. And it's like he would throw a joke. We would all laugh. It did feel communal and it felt very much like we were all present and we were all part of this experience. And that was what I got the impression that like he just does that and he's probably been doing that. And I just didn't know about it. I asked my friend like, hey, how did you know about the show? Mm-hmm. And he was like, oh, I'm on like fan groups, you know, like I'm sites or whatever. I'm a fan. Mm-hmm. And so whenever he goes on tour, we get notified. And I think it's he sometimes is like, cool, it's time to go out and spend some time with people again with this music. And then I'm going to go home and go back to what I'm doing, you know? Mm. There was a new song that he played. So I guess that is a hint to releasing a new album. But yeah, it was also interesting. It felt like he brought the woman who played before him the opening show. He brought her back out and they played several songs together, the two, because he plays with a woman. Typically, my understanding is he always has like a female counterpart. There's a lot of vocalization in his songs from women. Mm-hmm. And but he brought the other opener out too, and they all played together. And it felt like he also goes out to like people that he wants you to see. Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting when we got there, we were waiting outside of the auditorium and the show should have already started. We like got there, got our drinks, we're waiting, and they wouldn't let us in. And my friend was like, what is going on? And I was like, well, maybe the opener's playing and they just aren't letting us in because the opener's playing. And he was like, oh, that's weird. Cause I mean, we paid to see the show, so they should let us in to see the show. Mm-hmm. But it turned out that was what was happening. When they did let us in, she was at the end of her set, but it was obvious that she had been playing and they were kind of preserving the atmosphere for her to play. And I just appreciate that so much. Mm. It's a bummer for me because I missed most of her set, but it's also, I think, goes back to that thing of giving space for what you're doing. This is a communal thing. And like, I'm playing for you and you're here to listen to me. And it really set, I think, the tone. And it's part of why it was everyone was, oh, this is what we're here to do. Mm-hmm. We're here to listen. We're not here to like joke around or whatever and get up and down, blah, blah, blah. It's like, we're here to listen. And so that was interesting.
Yeah. Kind of like a, you know, a theater or symphony kind of concert where like you, if you miss that moment to go in before it starts, you got to wait till there's a natural pause or intermission. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mentioned that and I was like, this is done. It's not often done at concerts, but it should be, in my opinion. I mean, depending on what style concert you're going to, obviously, but if it's a single woman with an instrument playing on a stage in front of all these people, you know, a bunch of people coming in and out, trying to figure out their seats and like moving drinks around or whatever, it's just going to be a distraction and an annoyance and
to everyone.
Yeah. And so I really appreciated that they were doing that. And that again brought me back to sort of Damian Rice's intentionality. He's like, he seems very focused on doing things with intention and making sure that he's creating spaces for like being present and being with these thoughts and these emotions and this experience.
Mm-hmm.
So
I have a follow-up then to all that, because we you know, we're kind of extolling the benefits of that concert format, but I've definitely been to one of those concerts where it didn't add meaning or feel special in the way that it was intended. Right. And so it didn't land in that one instance.
Mm-hmm.
And I was almost annoyed by it being this forced, serious vibe, despite the like kind of music it was. Right. It just, I felt like I was being stifled and I couldn't appreciate the music how I wanted to. And whether that's the right way to feel, that's neither here nor there. But I guess I'm just curious about your preference. I know there's a time and a place, but is there right. just generally one way that you prefer to see music?
It depends on the music. It really does. I think when you're dealing with a singer-songwriter person who may have, you know, even band members that come out and may have other people that play with them, but they are the musician.
Mm-hmm.
And it is very acoustical and, you know, it's really just them. I do like the sit down kind of focus. We're here to listen to you play approach. But when I saw Pearl Jam, for example, it was a great show.
Mm-hmm.
I thoroughly enjoyed it, but you want to be in a crowd, mm-hmm. right? And we had seats because, let's be honest, the show was expensive.
Mm-hmm.
We could not afford to be on the floor, but you could see like that's where you want to be. You want to be on, you know, so it's like it just really is. It depends on the music and depends on kind of the style of the music that you're listening to. For me,
yeah.
I went to a Massive Attack show and I was like, what? Fucking seats? No, I was so mad. The savior of that show was that they were like, everyone come on down. And then you could rush up and kind of, but there's only so much space. And then, of course, all the front row people are going to be like, WTF.
Yep.
I paid X amount of money to be number one. And you just invited all these people from elsewhere.
Yeah.
So like, it's complicated. But yeah, I mean, I've been to a handful of shows that were like the Damien Rice thing that I was like, oh man. And I've cried in most of the ones that I'm talking about. I am emotionally impacted in a way that I was not even prepared for. I was prepared for Damien Rice to be emotional, but I've been to some where I was, whoa, that took me places. And I think it would not have had it been casual stand up free form. You know, I think mm-hmm. the sort of sitting you in a place and be like, no, you're here to experience this.
Yeah.
Is what allowed me to get to that place. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it depends.
Mm-hmm.
You hope that the artist knows what they are and what they're providing, right? And then what that should be.
Yeah. And what their audience is looking for or going to them for, right? Because that Massive Attack one is that came to my mind right away because it's like we all had seats and I didn't buy seats next to y'all or anybody else that we were there with. And so I was by myself in this section. I was like, this is not at all like nothing about this is the environment that I expected. And it just, And then of course, it was disruptive to move up to the front of the stage, but it's also like there should have been a space for that. Like that's not entirely on us.
The seats shouldn't have existed. And it felt like an acknowledgement by them, really, that like, and that's part of it too, right? It's kind of your venues often dictate what the options are.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like an acknowledgement from them of being like, yeah, we get it. This is not right.
Yeah.
This is not right. You want to move and you're kind of stuck in a chair on the ground level. And that's because we all got seats on the ground level for that reason, because there was a balcony. So it's like you could have sat somewhere else.
Right. Right. Yeah. The other thinking about these quieter, understated performances reminds me of this other concert that we'll never, ever, ever have the chance to talk about again. So I'm going to raise it now.
Yeah, great.
Unless you happen to have the CD, which if you do, we will have a conversation offline because you should not.
Okay.
But the band is Dashboard Confessional. And I went to see him when I was a freshman in college. So somewhere in Deep Ellum. And it was a teeny tiny venue. And it was one of those where like, I didn't go into it expecting it to be like this intimate thing. But they had, of course, packed that venue. And so we're all standing like shoulder to shoulder. And it's intimate music, right? Like it's pretty pared down. And so it's just him with guitar, I guess. And there was that one song and everyone was singing along, but like at a whisper. And then he just stopped singing and was just, you know, playing. And the crowd was just like whisper singing. And it was magical, you know?
Yeah. Those are the moments. I mean, that's why we go to shows,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
For those moments where like, you're all there. I don't know.
But at the same time, this band that I'm into right now, they dabble in a lot of genres, and I shouldn't say dabble. They develop expertise in a lot of genres. And so when you go to their concerts,
I like that you corrected yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's good.
I don't want the Reddits to come for me.
They don't even know who it is yet. They're going to find out at a later date. Wait, I've already mentioned it, haven't I?
I don't think so. I think
we've kept it pretty secret.
That's yeah. Good. Yeah.
Good for us.
And we will until
September. Until you give me a CD.
2023, when your world has changed. Yeah. But what they do is like occasionally they will just do an acoustic concert. And previously they wouldn't necessarily always advertise when they were going to do that. And so you'd go to the show and it might be acoustic that night.
So
for some fans of that particular band who got into them for a particular genre that they were.
Yeah. You know, album genre, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. It can be like, oh, what? Yeah. So I'm just kind of intrigued by that. You know,
do you think that those people, though, they've already bought tickets? The assumption is they're like, OK, well, I guess I'm going to do this now. Do you think if you talk to them at the end of the show, they're like, that was incredible. I'm so glad I was here. Yeah. Are they swayed at the end? Do you feel like?
I think for the most part, yes, because it's such a rare gem of a moment that they don't do all the time. But, you know, for those hardcore metalheads, you imagine someone who loves metal in your head, and then you picture them listening to acoustic jazz, you know, like that, especially if that's the only thing they know about that band, or like they haven't, they're new fans and they haven't explored everything, like that could be like, whoa, what have I done?
It's also what they need to find out about that band.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
They're going to find out eventually. It may be jarring and weird, but it is part of being a fan of that band.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and again, I think it's kind of, as long as they walk away, if they're open to it, which they should be, and then they walk away like, oh, that was good. Then, you know, they've had a new experience that they would not have stepped into of their own volition. Right.
Right. Yeah.
So changing minds and hearts towards other types of music.
So do you want to get into your top five of 7 songs?
Yeah, baby. Yeah. Okay. So my number 5 on this list is Lone Lily, the second song on the album. I mean, there's only 7 songs, so, and one of them is instrumental. I like all of these songs. This song is about, it feels like it's about like being cheated on and trying to forgive somebody for that. I really loved the line, you took him all the way through your bed. Every time I hear it and that line happens, I sing it and I feel it in a way that it like pulls me in every single time. It was almost my number 4. And I'm still a little like, I don't know. It could be number 4 or 5, but I'm going to say what I've written down, which is 5.
Mm. Yeah, it was my number 4.
Oh, great. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I like this because, I don't know, it covers like a lot of experiences and the trying to forgive, trying to forget, like you're coming home. Like, I think it really hits something up. You want something to work and you're trying to convince yourself to be committed more than you actually are committed to it working out.
Yeah.
I really like this song a lot. And I think it's just, it's really like singable and kind of catchy. It has a nice rhythm and flow to it. And honestly, like neither of us want to be alone. No one wants to be alone. Like it's a hard place to be. And I really appreciate that in this scene that is being described, that's a takeaway of it. It's struggling with that feeling, right? Mm-hmm. That you don't, what's better, right? Like, and what are you willing to sacrifice? It's a tough situation. And yeah, I appreciate the way he kind of unpacked it and tried to reconcile it in this lyric.
Yeah.
Yeah. I liked it.
Yeah. It's a good one. I think they're all good. So it's really, what did you leave off will be the ultimate question. You know?
Yeah.
What was your number 5 since that was your number 4?
My number 5 was the Moody
Monday.
Yeah.
That was mine, not on the list.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Because I think that like the beat's good, but it's just kind of a spiller to me. It doesn't have a lot of depth, but I still enjoy it. It's not, it was one of the ones that I sometimes clicked through, like bypassed. Yeah. I skipped occasionally.
I think it's filler. It never pulls me in. I don't skip it. I mentally check out while I'm listening to it and I start doing something else every time it plays. That's not on the list.
Yeah.
My number four, and I'm wondering if it's your not on the list, is Woman Like a Man.
That's it.
Yeah. Woman Like a Man is not filler, which is the reason why it makes it on the list. If you want to sort of be aggressive and casual sex and like get fucked up and like whatever, his lyrics are literally saying that you're a woman pretending to be a man, right? You're a woman like a man. And honestly, women can do whatever the fuck we want. But at the same time, I relate to it. Like, because sometimes it does feel like you're being like a man, you know, in a bad way. So it's like a negative connotation to men ultimately, because it's all these negative sort of aggressive thoughts and feelings and sort of pushy and whatever. But I really like the beat to it. I like the aggression of it. I like singing it. And it's funny because it reminds me of, there's a song by, do you listen to Tamar? Mm-mm. She has a song called I'm That. And it literally is her flipping back and forth between masculine and feminine ideals. And she's basically like, I do both, bitch. I am both those things. I am all the things. And while this doesn't do the flip back and forth, it just does the, you were acting like a woman, like a man, and aggressive, negative, whatever things. It's like one side of it. She does both. But I love her song so much that like you can feel both ways. So when I hear this one, it's only doing that one side, but it's like, that is a fucking side that women feel. And like, often I don't like the pointedness of it because it feels a little judgy, but also I think that like people do sort of judge women for that behavior. And so honest, even if it's not necessarily correct, you know?
Yeah. I think there's also a part of it that he's also calling out clearly in the rest of his songs, like, they're not manly, you know? And so there's some of that too, that he's calling out the whole notion of that. It's just, I don't know that it's super successful. And I also just cannot stand the way he growls, man. Like that really does it for me. Like, I can, the lyrics, I can sing along to him. I think, you know, it's catchy, it's groovy, you know, it kind of gets you.
Is that like a pet peeve of yours?
A big pet peeve. I cannot handle it.
No growling.
And in fact, we didn't talk about the other pet peeve, which I think is on that lonely, where it has this choir of him where it's like singing along. That is another one. I'm like, don't even layer your own voice into like some background choir over like useless filler in your song. Yeah. It does not do anything to make a song better. And that's the same with this growl. It's like, ugh.
Okay, I don't mind the growl. I actually like the growl. Ooh. But I do agree with the Lone Lily layering of your own vocals over each other. It actually, which is interesting that you pointed that out, because it's like I've noticed it, but haven't really noticed it. But it is, I catch it and I get a little like, it pulls you out of it. It's like, I don't know. It's not successful. Don't do it.
Don't.
Damien Rice, take our notes.
Yeah, just call a friend and
let them listen to it and give you feedback.
Yeah, and then record them singing it, you know, like, and then just give them a little credit on the, it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
But you probably don't need that in there anyway.
And it's so interesting because he does use female vocals so often to layer into his songs that, and maybe that's the reason why, because I'm like, why do I always call it out in my head where I'm like, oh, that's weird. Because it's not for the same reasons as you, because it's not a pet peeve, but I think it's that I'm expecting he uses like a female voice so often to like layer into his songs that when it is him, just like kind of all him, that's no. Which is why it's not my number five.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed.
All right. My number three is The Professor and La Fille Dance. That is the song that Damien opened the show with. Mm. And as soon as it started, I was like, I love this song. I love the French cherry on top ending of the song. It's the first on the album, which means, you know, per usual, it's the one that you listen to the most, right? This is one of those albums that I will put on as I'm like reading or going to bed or whatever. And so if you do that with an album, the first song is naturally the song you listen to the most,
because all the time. Yeah.
Who knows when you're going to fall asleep, but it could be literally the second song. I feel it the most. I can hear a couple chords and be like, well, that's what that is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Big fan.
Yeah. This was my number two of my top five. Yeah.
I like that we're like close, but not the same.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, it's a little off.
Yeah, I like the name of the song, and then the way he talks about the professor, like where he names the professor that, you know, I am the professor, I should, like, as if he's some expert in this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And yet he doesn't know how to make this person happy or to fulfill their desires or whatever it is. But you should know, right? Because you're this person with this expertise. I really like that woven throughout the story. And there's a lyric that stood out. Loving is fine if you have plenty of time for walking on stilts at the edge of your mind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that, I mean, it's kind of a perfect lyric. Because one, I think because it calls out the fact that you do have to be an active participant in love. Like everyone talks about it as this like dream state that you're just like, oh, you're captivated. You can't control. You're just, oh, just stricken and you don't have any agency in it. But he's actually saying that you do have to actively take part in this thing, and it's not an easy thing to do. You have to figure out how to make it work and how to be happy in that, and how to please the other person and live up to their expectations. And that might mean presenting in a way that you don't normally, like walking on stilts, right? And I'm probably reading way too much into that, but I really like that as a statement about what love requires.
So much of this song is him like asking like about her, like what do I need to do for her? Like, how do I actively asking, how do I love her right? How do I love her the way she wants? How do I love her the way that I want? You know, like
mm-hmm.
It's the engagement of it, the engagement of love, as opposed to just I am in love, you know?
Yeah. I thought it was really, really clever.
Do you know what the French?
Yes. Every time I listen to it, I try to translate it myself.
Uh-huh.
And then finally today I translated it using the interwebs, and I got pretty close. I was proud that I got pretty close, but it means the girl dances when she plays with me, and I think that sometimes I like the silence. Don't you dare say that we are together to put words to the little sleep.
That's nice.
It is. So yeah, I like that one a lot. It was my number two. My number three was the last track,
Volcano 97 demo, which is my number two.
Oh, yeah. The song's great.
It's really good. So like I have a top tier Damien Rice and Volcano and my number one, which seems like we'll probably both have the same number one,
mm-hmm.
are on my top, like overall. I love this song. This is the demo song. You will eventually hear the one that went out on the album.
Mm-hmm.
So I love the original song on the album. So it's kind of cheating here for me because it's pulling me towards the song that I really, really love. Right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's just a different version. It's this 97 demo. I love listening to the original tracks of singer songwriters, like their first go at something, and you know where it lands in the end, and you're like, oh, that song is so fucking good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is just like the beginning of what it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So my version of it is like, and I don't even want to talk about the original song because we'll get to that later, right? But for me, it's so high because what it's doing is it's like triggering all the things that I love about the song that came out on the album.
Mm-hmm.
And it's showing me where he like started with it, which I always love that. That's just, I'm a fan of the demo tracks. Yeah. Why for you?
Yes. Like I said, my notes said yes.
Exclamation point.
I think this one was the music more than the lyrics, as far as like what was the first attraction to it.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, I do love I guess that's the chorus, the what I am to you is not real. I think that's just a really catchy section of the song.
And it's so fucking good.
Yeah.
It's so good. So it's a cheat for me to put it as high as it is on this list. It actually probably should be number three instead of number two for that reason. I love that song so much that, you know, I was like, well, it's number two. It's just, I didn't even think about it. But now sitting here with it, I'm like, it's probably number three for this album.
Mm-hmm.
Because this, it's not the song, right? Yeah. It's not the version that I like am head over heels in love with. So I'm actually changing that officially on record right now. Professor goes up to two. Volcano demo goes down.
Whoa. Whoa. Then that means our top three are the same.
That's right. Same. Same.
That's
same.
The first.
Yeah. That's what happens when there's only a handful of songs.
Are we ready to talk about the number one song?
Yeah. Delicate.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the song that I cried, wept, tears in the concert. It is one of my favorite songs by him. Yeah. Okay. So Delicate. It's one of my favorite songs by him overall. Top notch. I'm not sure there's another song that beats it. The original Volcano might, question mark, but Delicate is one that I feel I connect to emotionally. It reminds me of a specific relationship, like in my life. Yeah. If, you know, I think the idea of a relationship in general being delicate and like this concept of being together, but not being necessarily super open about it. And like finding your way through it and being pulled to each other. But maybe if you're not willing to like do that super openly, there are reasons why. And then those are complicated. And yeah, this song just really brings up a lot of emotions for me. And I just think that he captures the like fragility of it. Of like, yeah, wanting to be with somebody. Particularly yeah. somebody who like you don't even think you should be with, maybe, you know, like you have, it's complicated and I don't know, you hope that love is not, and you hope that you find someone to love and that while it will be work and it will take compromise and you have to move through love and figure out how to work with each other through growth and all that. You would hope that at the beginning, it's just kind of like, no, we're in love, but that's not always the case. And sometimes it's complicated and it's not ideal even, but it's still there and it's undeniable. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think that I completely agree. I think this is a magical song and this is the one of this album that I found belting. I found myself belting in the car as I was driving around it. This is the one I cranked up and would sing along to. But especially the why do you sing hallelujah if it means nothing to you? Because like, at least in the way that it's presented in these lyrics, they're both in it, but he's calling out the other person for why are you doing this if it doesn't mean anything to you, as if they have different levels of engagement in it. And I thought that was an interesting perspective because again, like they both have agency in this and they're both keeping it locked, right? Like keeping it private, right?
Keeping it at a distance, kind of, right? Yeah. Like it feels like it's happening. We're both here, but there's something pushing it apart. And, yeah.
And so that stands out to me because it's like one person is calling out the other for something that they're both doing. And yet it's just such a really like passionate vocal line. But another thing that I appreciate about this is really the way that it captures those intimate moments in a relationship. One of the things, podcast listener world, that I am frequently like grappling with is that I process things by talking about them. And so frequently when it comes to like processing what's happening in my life, like I will process the negative shit, the bad stuff, the hard stuff, and I will talk about that. And so it can give a perception that, you know, things are all bad. And that's misleading and not accurate at all. And I think the way that this is written, this is why I don't talk about the things that aren't bad, the things that are magical and wonderful and special. There's something that's so powerful in keeping those small moments, the little intimate nuggets that you only have with that one person, and holding on to those like it's $1 trillion lottery ticket, right?
Yeah. That, and they're just yours because you're just not sharing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. They just belong to the two of you in that moment. And it's just so special. And this is just a really beautiful, I mean, I know the song goes other places with that nugget, but
it also showcases it. I mean, I think it's like showcasing the beauty in that too, right? It's kind of calling to that and questioning, like, we have those moments. Why do we not have more of them? And why can't we like solidify this a little better?
Yeah.
Because we have those and it feels like we should have more. Like it feels like this could be more, but then it's not. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A+.
A++.
Best song on the album.
So good. How exciting. We have the same top three for the first time. All right.
Bonus tracks. What would you recommend if someone, I mean, obviously this is like the Dr. Dog album. It's a short one. It's kind of a introduction to the style. And so he has other full length albums that, as a first step, any person who wants to learn more about Damien Rice should go to those. But who else out there comes to mind? What other artists?
I honestly didn't do bonus tracks. So this is all going to be free will and just what's on top of the old dome. I don't know. I mean, it's interesting because so much of what I listen to in what I would consider this genre of like acoustic singer songwriter, emotional, like really laying it out there, are people that we've already kind of touched on, right? Like Joni Mitchell. I think Ani DeFranco has that a bit, but I don't know of any comparable male singers necessarily, or I'm just not thinking of them right now.
Yeah, I think you're not thinking of them.
Yeah.
Elliot
Smith, obviously.
Yeah, that's the one that came to my mind first.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you for just being like, what? Come on. Elliot Smith, 100%. Audience, if you have not listened to Elliot Smith, get you some. So we're going to definitely, oh man, I can't wait to do that one.
We need it so badly.
Can't wait.
That record. Let's
can't
go.
Wait. That one's going to be a hefty one. There's going to be so much there.
We might just cry on the pod. We might just have to like take a moment and cry. Just
weep. Yeah.
So good.
Yeah. Yeah. Elliot for sure.
The other guy that I was thinking of is Andrew Bird. And not like as like literal relationship stuff, but I think the vibe matches and his lyrics are very poetic and there's, you know, deeper meaning behind. It's not just random shit.
He's very whimsical though, you know, but I mean, yeah. I see what you're saying. I feel like just because you said Elias, like I was like, oh wait, duh, Melody. Like I probably have a ton just in my own, like what I listen to, because I listen to sad acoustic music. That's my jam. It's kind of all I listen to. So you would think I would have more.
I think the person who came up on Spotify after Damien Rice, was it Alexi Murdoch?
Oh, I love Alexi Murdoch. And he was around the same time. I actually have an album of his that you will get one day. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jose Gonzalez.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like he's probably in the same wheelhouse, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Seriously, I'm like, if I just go through my album, it's going to be real sad. Like, oh, and this one and this one.
Would you say Nick Drake?
Oh, yes. 100%. 100%. I listened to Nick Drake recently and it'd been a while and I'm very, very happy. Man, look at all these good suggestions we're giving our audience. This is great. Oh, Iron and Wine.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know what we should do on this one is make a little playlist.
Oh, we should. That would be good.
Bonus tracks.
There are going to be so many liner notes to this podcast.
Who knew? I didn't anticipate it.
It's going to be our playlist. There was another thing that we said we were going to drop in the liner notes.
Patreon.
Yeah, how to get to our Patreon and support us.
Yeah, the gal, the opening act.
Yeah.
Of the concert, YouTube concert.
Yeah. Oh, I love this. I love the idea of a playlist. So that's what we'll do. We will get together and we will put together a playlist. Our bonus tracks will be a playlist for you, dear audience.
And obviously we're going to go and do that for every other episode, right?
Like, yeah.
We have to do that. We have to go back and
all
the things that we recommended, even if it's just like five songs, we'll make a playlist for every episode.
We should start a Spotify account, actually.
Yeah. Actually. Yeah. Okay. Fuck. Yeah. Why is this so difficult? There's too many things.
Yeah, it's because we have good ideas and we know what the people want and we're going to give it to them. Okay.
Fuck.
We're going to give it to you, audience, and you're going to love it. And we're going to love you for loving it.
Aww.
That's how it's going to work.
So sweet.
Yeah. Heart emoji. Great. Well, we've done a lot. This is good. We have adjusted our podcast to give you, the audience, more.
Yeah.
If you want to support us, help us, help you, help us talk about music more.
Spoiler alert. We're going to fucking do it anyway, but you'll make us have more fun doing it.
Yeah, that's true.
Because we won't be spending as much money on stamps. We'll be spending your money on stamps. Thank you.
I love it. Anything else to discuss for our little Damien Rice?
I think that's it. Great choice. Insights.
Yeah. Glad you enjoyed it. Everyone, you know, take a listen to it. And as usual, make sure you are getting those CDs and listen to them and keeping the format alive. And, you know, hit that subscribe button, check out our Patreon, listen to our Spotify. We're going places. We're going places. So come along slowly, with us.
Slowly and have shortly. Fun. Eventually.
They don't know that. They're just...
Well, when this episode is released in the year 2027, you'll get the joke.
All right. All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.